Yes, I am.
Well, good morning, all. We'll call to order the meeting of the virtual meeting of the Washington State Fish and Wildlife Commission for Saturday, September 12, 2020. Hope all are doing well, and these fires are going to end promptly. I just have one thought or comment I'll throw out if there's no objection. I'm looking at the agenda today. I see we have a break at 10:30. I'm recommending or proposing that maybe we move the break after the commercial whale watching briefing. So it's about 11:30 or so. That way, if someone wants to get a break and get a sandwich, because we don't have a lunch break today. Is there any objection to that? Okay, Nikki. Okay.
Mr. Chair, as long as we're talking about some housekeeping items, I have one. And it's kind of a some remaining business on the Columbia River matter. We did not get a chance to talk about how to move forward with concurrency with Oregon, kind of a process. And I'd like to reserve some time during the meeting planning agenda item to talk about that.
So okay. Okay. I guess we can do that. I was suggesting we do that offline, but if you want to bring it up in a formal fashion, so be it. Commissioner McKay, you have your hand up.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think there's some other things under Columbia River too that we didn't get a chance to clean up yesterday. So, I mean, some minor things like giving the staff the liberties to put that into a policy format, fix the typos, nice it up a little bit. That probably doesn't deserve too much discussion. But a communication plan, I think we did not get to that yesterday. And I wanted to bring up the matter of the climate change alternative that we did not get on the table. I don't want to reopen the vote at all, but I just wanted to have a little discussion about that. So I know at the end of the meetings, often we get to meeting debrief, we can be overtime, we can be late and everything else. But I think just these little things that we didn't get to finish that Columbia River item and clean it up nicely should be dealt with then. And we should for sure plan on having that agenda item, the meeting debrief and the year at a glance and all of that.
Commissioner Anderson.
Yeah, real simply, during the meeting debrief, I want to make sure that I have time to present or suggest a blue sheet on pinniped management. So that's it.
Okay. 1 second, something just popped up on my. Okay, we are now agenda item 10. This is open public input. Public testimony is accepted only during this agenda item designated for public input and during open public input. Portions of the agenda for items not on the agenda. Be aware that testimony may be taken out of order. Speakers will have 3 minutes to speak. A timer will alert you to when you are done. We'd appreciate if you would wrap up your conversation at that point. Nikki, how many folks do we have this morning?
So far, I've got one, but if you're on the computer, make sure to raise your hand. And if you're on the phone, please press *9. There we go. All right, so far we've got 7.
Okay,
first we have David Lynn, followed by Karen Knud. Go ahead, David. Make sure to unmute yourself.
Okay. Greetings, Commissioner. My name is David Lynn from Ocean Shores, representing myself in support of wildlife and wild places. And first, I'd like to thank commissioners for voting to approve the restrictions on wildlife killing contests. I think that's a very positive step forward, and I certainly appreciate all of your efforts in looking into that and making that decision. So thank you very much. Yesterday, I referenced the presentation by the department staff on a conference call to discuss certain incidents involving the Lead Point Wolfpack. This call was an effort to convince listeners that the department must kill again. It was stated that no one had seen any wolves, yet the results of conflict, injured and dead calves, were found in the pasture where they grazed. How can that be? We heard that the cattle producers of Washington, called Kapow, at ARSOT's range riders called conflict monitors in the field occasionally, 28 out of 43 days, they were completely ineffective in preventing the conflict. This sounds much like what was reported in the Capitol Press on May 11th of this year, where the Capal spokesman predicted that their conflict monitors will find more dead or injured cattle than range riders have in the past, with the reporter noting that each discovery potentially brings fish and wildlife closer to shooting wolves. The spokesman stated that, quote, "I wouldn't be surprised if we took some heat for that," end quote. We learned on the call that the conflict monitors were working first shift while the wolves were out on second and third shifts. It'd be called deterrence. It amounts to nothing more than allowing conflict to occur at night and then looking for the results during the day, just like the Capal spokesman said. Further, since the conflict monitors were in the field so infrequently, they could not uphold the requirement of removing sick, dead, and injured animals, effectively leaving them as bait for predators. Another interesting statement by staff was that once the kill order was issued, the Capal conflict monitors had to be reminded that they were to continue their efforts. It was as if they felt that once the kill order was achieved, their work was done. It appears that the conflict monitors are not out to prevent conflict. They are there to record it after the fact in order to get the department to kill wolves. Until August 4th, there had been only injured calves and no deaths, so staff could not recommend a kill order under the terms of the protocol. But once they had a calf seriously injured enough that it might die, the team sprang into action so they would have their kill recommendation ready to go. The calf died on the 7th, the recommendation was made on the 8th, and once the magic number was achieved, the kill order was issued. It was even explicitly stated on the call that staff was focused on that count. This was an inappropriate kill recommendation because the requirements of the protocol were not met and the department failed to implement all possible preventive measures. There was no human presence during the relevant hours and proper sanitation did not occur. Rather than trying to resolve the problem, the department has now thrown up its hands saying there's nothing else that it can do. It will allow the incidents to continue and the wolf killing to follow. This is a disgrace and changes must be made. The department is failing in its obligation to protect our wildlife. Thank you for your time.
Any questions of Mr. Lynn by the commission? Seeing none, thank you for your comments, David. Nikki?
Next, we've got Karen Knud, followed by Lavelle Pratt. Go ahead, Karen. Okay, Karen's using an old version of Zoom. I'm going to promote her to panelists so we can hear her. Okay, go ahead, Karen. Karen, you can unmute yourself. Okay, well, we'll come back to Karen. Let's see, Lavelle Pratt, go ahead. Make sure to unmute yourself.
Good morning, can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Thank you. Good morning, commissioners, and thank you for this opportunity to provide public comments. My name is Lavelle Pratt, and I am the Marine Protection and Policy Director at Friends of the San Juans. In 2001, Friends of the San Juans was a co-petitioner for the federal listing of the southern resident orcas under the Endangered Species Act. The protection and recovery of the southern residents continues to be one of our top priorities. I am also a member of the Commercial Whale Watching Licensing Program Advisory Committee. I know I don't need to tell you that the southern resident orcas are in grave danger of extinction. In addition to the very important work that you have before you to implement the Commercial Whale Watch Licensing Program, additional regulations and more enforcement is needed with regard to recreational boaters. This is especially needed given the increased number of boaters in Washington state waters due to COVID, including many new and inexperienced boaters. I want to respectfully ask that you ensure that Washington State Department of Fish and Wildlife Enforcement is on the scene whenever southern residents are in Washington state waters, especially given the increase in recreational boating traffic. And I want to thank you, commissioners, for all the work you do on behalf of Washington State's wildlife. And I trust that you'll fulfill the requirements of the legislature's directive to base the commercial whale watch licensing program on science in order to ensure the protection and recovery of southern resident orcas. Thank you so much.
Are there any questions from the commission? Hearing none. Lavelle, thank you for your comments. Nikki?
Okay, Karen, go ahead. Okay, go ahead, Karen. See your hand.
Hi, I am so sorry that I had technical difficulties and was not able to speak at the time that you first inquired. Can you hear me okay now?
Yes, we can hear you.
Great. Thank you very much. My name is Karen Cundy, and I'm from Seattle. And I wanted to, first of all, thank you very much for your vote yesterday regarding the killing contest. I think that was an incredibly important and right thing to do. I also wanted to let you know that I have been first speaking before you in 2012 and had asked you not to kill the wedge pack, and I'm very disappointed in the finishing of the killing of the wedge pack, especially because that was one of the packs that the public actually got to know a little bit about. Very infrequently do we get to know something about our wolves before they're killed. But in that case, the public got to know the wedge pack in 2012 because of the ability of the news reporters to be able to come out, show pictures of them, record the howlings of the wolves, and just what that did for public engagement in our wildlife and our wildlands, I want you to think about, because in your draft strategic plan, one of the things that I'm very grateful that you talk about is the need to get public engaged in going outdoors and understanding their wildlife, getting to know their wildlife and their wildlands. And the way that you do that is for the public to know more about individual wolves. And while there is always risk in that, because it does, unfortunately, also provide information to potential poachers at the same time, in order to get the public to really appreciate what's out there, they have to know something about them. One example would be, of course, Rick McIntyre, who has done a tremendous job of writing about individual wolves and the sort of sophistication and nuance of wolf culture that none of us would have had any idea about had we not had somebody like that who has taken the time and the resources to really bring that to the public view. What it also does is it opens up immense promise for the new economies that have potential in some of the rural areas that I would love to see us have seed money for young people in Kettle Falls to be able to be a new kind of outfitter, where they can take families out to camp and to hear wolves howl at night. That's a real potential for people to earn money in a new way that they have not been doing. We have not been taking advantage of the fact that we have this magnificent wildlife out there, and there's no reason we should not be doing that. And I think that I am very pleased by the cattlemen who have been willing to work with non-lethal, who have worked very hard at it, and the range riders who are successful. We should be doing something to incentivize that, where the ones who are doing a good job are getting noticed for that and are receiving some financial incentive for that. Conversely, the ones that are not on the job 100%, whether literally or just by attitude, they should not be continuing to receive dollars for that. We really need to make this work, and I think it can work. I would like you to call off the killing of the Lead Point pack. I think that the terrain in which that is done virtually assures that there will be injured animals that will escape that you will not be able to find. And that is something that concerns me a great deal. And I feel that with, firefighting and everything else going on in that area, let's just call it off, for the year. There's been enough harm and damage already caused. And I think that, what I would really like to see is just a cease and desist of that and a greater analysis of how we can do a better job in the future. You've got the support of the public on this non-lethal. We'll do anything we can to help. We obviously talk to our legislators about any financial resources that you need. If you need more financial resources for things like upping your game on policing poaching, you know, let us know, because that's something we can go to our legislators and say, you know, there need to be more resources for these things.
Karen,
we really
you are
want
time.
To see. Thank you.
Any questions from any of the commissioners? Karen, thank you for your comments. Nikki?
Okay, next we've got Donna Sandstrom, followed by Larry Pryor. Go ahead, Donna. Make sure to unmute yourself.
Hello, everyone. Thank you very much. I'm the founder director of the Whale Trail, a series of locations to view orcas and other marine mammals from shore. The department has been a core team partner in the Whale Trail since our founding, and I'm grateful for your early and ongoing support. I'm here today to talk about licensing for commercial whale watching. As a member of Governor Inslee's task force, I envisioned and championed the licensing system as a way to reduce noise and disturbance around the critically endangered orcas. The recommendation was based on the science that shows that noise and salmon availability are inextricably linked. The approach was calibrated with DFW staff to ensure it was implementable and enforceable. Reducing noise and disturbance is not the only thing we can or should do, but it's the one thing that will make a difference right now for these struggling pods by making it easier for them to find what food is there. I wanted to say a word about the problem the law was meant to address. Most people are surprised by the scale of the industry and how rapidly it grew. In 2018, there were 54 whale watching companies in the Salish Sea, operating 120 vessels between them. During the peak summer months, they operate up to 12 hours a day. Most companies do multiple trips and many offer sunset cruises. Cumulative exposure to noise and disturbance at these levels by these acoustic animals negatively impacts foraging ability, social cohesion, and reproductive capacity, certainly leading to the problems we see in the population today. Their impacts are magnified by the recreational boats they attract, and worsened because of poor compliance with guidelines. Commercial operators, like all boaters, are 2 to 3 times more likely to disobey guidelines unless enforcement is present. And enforcement is present less than 1/3 of the time the industry operates. There is a role for sustainable boat-based whale watching. It must be sustainable for the whales first. The department has been delivered a powerful set of adaptive tools to define what that looks like. But they are only words on paper if you don't choose to apply them the way they were intended to protect the whales. A few things have changed since the law was passed. 5 adult whales have died just in the last 2 years, and the whales appear to be abandoning their summer habitat. More importantly, the economics are clear. A recent report showed that over the past decade, during the same period the whales declined, the number of whale watching companies more than doubled and their revenue nearly tripled. Requiring the industry to avoid the southern residents will have no impact on their economic viability. In fact, the opposite appears to be true. In Canada, where a moratorium on watching the southern residents has been in place for 2 years, ridership on commercial vessels increased. We recently learned that Tahlequah gave birth to a new calf and at least 2 other females are pregnant, a ray of hope for this population. Their future is in your hands. This is the last and most critical leg of a long marathon to protect the whales, and the baton has been passed to you. Washingtonians and the world are watching and will be with you if you continue the effort to move boldly to protect the orcas and give Tahlequah and her calf a fighting chance. Thank you.
Any questions of Donna this morning? Seeing none, Donna, thank you for your comments. Nikki?
Okay, next we've got Larry Pryor, followed by Stephanie Vela. Go ahead, Larry. Make sure to unmute yourself.
Good morning. My name's Larry Pryor. I'm from Yakima, Washington. I'm involved in a number of different fisheries entities, Northwest Fisheries Enhancement. But the reason for my call today and the public comment is in regards, and I don't know if anybody else has spoken to you, but the format of the Zoom meetings here, and to compliment Nikki and your staff here on putting this forward. For me, from Yakima, I've been to a number, but it's been a while, commission meetings in Olympia and Tacoma. But the Zoom meetings on my side of the computer here make things more accessible, your meetings more accessible, your comments, and to some extent, I think I get a feel for the more personalities and the personal side of things. And I hope that in the future, as the pandemic passes, that maybe you can continue this. I think in the long run, it would probably increase participation in your meetings. I know that we can watch them on WATV, but that, you know, on my side of things, like particularly, you know, when you guys have interaction amongst yourself, you feel like you're able to participate or at least get a better feeling for your comments, some of the back and forth. And that as far as giving public input, I think it's a great format, and I hope it continues. Again, my compliments to Nikki and other staff that have went through this and learned how to do these Zoom meetings. But, you know, in the future, I hope they're able to continue. And that I'm also on a CRAG committee, and that some of those type of meetings are starting to shift into team meetings or Zoom meetings. And that certainly for a guy that's in Yakima to be able to participate in those, it makes it a lot easier. And that I've audited the last meeting here in August, participate a little bit. And then one in that it just is A, easier to attend, B, you get a better feel for things. And I think to some extent I get a bit more feel for you guys' personalities here, the way you're interacting over the regular meetings. And so that was my public comment here for today. I plan on commenting on the hatchery reform and the particular the Willapa Bay as I just returned from fishing out there for 3 weeks. So thanks.
Just a moment, Larry. A commissioner has his hand up. Commissioner Anderson?
Mr. Pryor, thank you for your comments. You know, I think we are finding that there's definitely some value in these meetings like this. They've worked out better than many of us have thought. However, we miss going out to different places. And maybe it's selfish, but I think it's also important for us to physically be able to go to different places, experience the senses that are there and people and the like. So I don't anticipate when this is all over that we'll continue always to be in a Zoom mode. I suspect that we'll try to do a combination of things, but I for one want to get over to Yakima and Eastern Washington on some of these meetings. But thank you for your comments.
Great. And on the downside of them, we're not able to network here as well as during the court when you have your meeting. So again, that was my public comment for this morning.
Mr. Pryor, thank you for your comments. Have a good day. Nikki, next, please.
Next, we've got Stephanie Vallea, followed by number 1916. Go ahead, Stephanie. Looks like you're unmuted, Stephanie.
Can you hear me?
Just barely. You're really soft.
Oh, can you hear me now?
Yes, just speak up a little bit.
Okay. Thank you. Good morning. Before I begin, I would like to say that we need to stop wildlife killing contests and instead find more humane alternatives to these terrible competitions. I would also like to express concern for the extremely endangered orcas and strongly urge you all to take urgent action to help them. My name is Stephanie Vallea, and I am a 13-year-old living in America. Yesterday, I should have been in school, but instead, I was here. And now I'm here again, and I'm here to make a difference. As the salmon and steelhead trout edge toward extinction, the U.S. recently began to allow killing sea lions at the Columbia River, one of their most common predators. I'm calling in hopes that the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife will stand against this decision. I know that by killing them, many have the good intention of helping these at-risk fish recover, but their numbers aren't decreasing because of sea lions. They are decreasing because of us, because we are capturing and fishing these fish faster than they can replenish. We are catching too many fish. Since the Second World War, our industrial fishing fleets have more than multiplied. This has exhausted key fish populations in the past and caused many of them to go extinct. Today, lots of fishes are being pushed to the brink of extinction due to overfishing, including haddock, halibut, sea bass, Atlantic cod, and salmon. If we continue to fish as much as we do now, none of these fish species will exist soon. So don't kill the sea lions to curb your own mistakes, because killing them will do nothing. The problem of fish populations getting smaller at the Columbia River is one that is very solvable, and the solution doesn't involve killing. Most coastal fish grow fast and have lots of young. As the fish grows bigger, it has exponentially more young. This means that if we allow the salmon and steelhead trout to do so, their numbers will bounce back in huge abundance. So we have to stop fishing in places where they breed and grow big. In marine reserves around the world, aquatic life that was once in danger has now been able to make an astonishing comeback. If we also increase the number of marine reserves in the U.S., these fish should fully recover. They will begin to thrive in immense numbers, and so will the creatures that eat fish. This will also be good news for fishermen, because the more fish there are, and the bigger they become, the more profit people can make. This is a future where everyone can thrive and benefit. And to accomplish such a future, we do not have to do any killing. So please, join me in making it happen. Thank you.
Any questions or comments for Stephanie?
Larry, Brad?
Commissioner Smith.
Stephanie, you did an outstanding job, and your points were well put in order, and I encourage you to maintain your level of enthusiasm and interest and continue to follow us in the issues. We need more youth like you out there in the future. So you're a future leader, and you're showing up today.
Thank you.
Thank you for your comments, Stephanie. Have a good day.
Thank you for your time.
Nikki, next, please.
Next, we've got caller 1916. You're unmuted. Go ahead and state your name for the record. Yep, there you go.
Good morning. My name is Dave Hedrick. I'm commenting today on the development of the 25-year strategic plan. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to participate yesterday. I was in the field. For the second time in a year, I'm asking for access to the planning process by rural people, two different processes. I would say that we live in a strange new time where the new normal is for people in power to work to exclude groups from public processes while claiming they would never do such a thing and there's nothing to see. So in asking for this access for rural people and specifically for private landowners, I'd like to make these points. First, these are the people that support most of the wildlife in the state, once, you know, one way or another. They're also the people that for decades and decades have supplied the product that DFW has sold and made lots of money off of for free. They are also the most impacted by policy that DFW makes, you know, specifically economically. And I would say that they deserve a prominent position, you know, in any sort of plan development. So there were 21 participants that the department supplied me with their comments, and there were five that were part of the budget and policy advisory group, but the rest were all invited, and there was not, you know, one single group that represented rural interests or the rural landowners. And I've spoken to several commissioners. I've worked extensively with Jeff Davis, and I've been looking for an answer to why that was. And to this point, everybody's passed the buck. And so today, you know, what I'm trying to figure out is where the buck stops. You know, I would like an answer for this. I would like rural people to be included in these processes. Thanks.
Any questions or comments from the commission? Commissioner Lindva, please.
Yeah, thank you for your comments, Mr. Hedrick. This is Commissioner Linville. We've obviously spoken on this topic, and it's also, you know, my top priority as well. And I do want you to know that Mr. Davis did take your comments very seriously. And during the scoping process and during the public survey, they went, I would say, certainly as far as I was hoping they would, and maybe even more. They got paper surveys out to people who wanted them to sort of overcome that, you know, lack of good internet service where we live out here. And I want you to know that they took it really seriously. And I think the public comments they got back, I'm going to botch this because I don't have, but it was very, very close to, like, I don't know if it was 40, 60, I'm sorry, I don't have that statistic for you, but of almost as many rural folks responded to the survey as urban area people. So you were taken very seriously by the department, and will continue to do so. And I hope that you'll keep reminding us to watch out for these folks. But I just want you to know you were taken seriously.
Thank you, Commissioner Lindvo.
Go ahead.
I was just going to thank you for your comments. Do you want to make a comment before we move on?
You know, briefly. I talked to, you know, I realized, Jeff, you know, after a fashion, this goes through a process just like the second time where, you know, the first outreach I do is like, no, this isn't a problem. And then it becomes, yes, you know, maybe this is a problem, and develops into, you know, really, you know, I understand what you're saying, Commissioner Linville. It was still, you know, for people who don't have internet access, and where I live, it was still very, very inadequate. And like I say, I'm still, you know, looking for, you know, why this started, you know, how this started in the beginning. And I can't get an answer, and it'd be great to get one.
Well, thank you, Mr. Hedrick, for your comments. We'll look forward to hearing more. And thank you, Commissioner Linville. Nikki, next, please.
All right, next we've got caller 3514, and that's the last hand I have up.
Thank you, Nikki.
Okay, go ahead, caller. And please state your name for the record.
Okay, good morning, Nikki. Chair Carpenter, commissioners, for the record, this is Heath Heikla. Thank you for the opportunity. I wanted to call in and thank those of you who did vote against the policy yesterday. I hadn't planned on mentioning that, but then I heard this is going to be a topic again today. My primary goal for today was to just kind of dial in and give you my thoughts about the PoundNet presentation that you received yesterday. I think, you know, without a doubt, it's the most promising alternative gear that is being developed. And frankly, after watching some of the questions and interaction of commissioners, it reinforced my belief that unfortunately, it's not likely to be the department or this commission, at least a concurrent construct, that really pushes it forward to development, which really makes me very of the belief that the words in the policy about moving swiftly towards implementation of alternative gear and, you know, using the most alternative gear, for me, are just words on paper looking at that. So, you know, you heard yesterday about the double standard and the what I'd call a stacked deck that's been set up at TAC for the development of that gear. And I would urge you that if you really do believe in the need for alternative gear, and you believe in the need for the department to take a leadership role in that, you would address that and work on it. And then it brings up really the elephant in the room, which is straying and hatchery production. We've had, particularly in the lower river, there's been a lot of misinformation. We've had, you know, sport groups that have written in and think PHAS is a word rather than an acronym. But, you know, frankly, the PHAS issue will not be addressed by the current gear that's available in the lower river, i.e. gillnets. It just won't be. So as you move forward, as you look to in concurrence, I think there's an opportunity to try to truly incentivize selective harvest in the lower river if you're serious about maintaining hatchery production. Everyone calls in and says they're worried about it, but no one seems to be doing anything about it. So where in the discussion moving forward with Oregon can you do that? Finally, as you do discuss this later today in terms of next steps with concurrence, I would recommend that all discussions on this topic in concurrence be made open via Zoom or whatever doesn't have to be open to public comment, but there's really no reason not to make these meetings fully transparent, fully open to anyone who wants to watch them, whether that be between staff or it be between commissioners, because there is extreme interest in this issue. If you just look at the response on social media and elsewhere to yesterday's decision. So those are my comments. I thank you. Breathe carefully out there. It is nasty, so thank you.
Any questions or comments from Mr. Heikele? Commissioner Keogh.
Yeah, thank you. Good morning, Heath. Thanks for calling in today. A couple of things. I completely agree with you as far as openness and transparency with further discussions. We're going to talk about that later. You probably got better things to do, but just let me know, just so you know, I completely agree with that. You participated in the PRC process, in the work group process, and so hopefully we can continue to make these meetings available to the public, at least just to watch it. And then on the alternative gear, I think you're right. I mean, there is now language, I think stronger language in the policy talking about alternative gear, and it's going to be up to the commission. Who's ever on the commission here in the next few years to really make this a priority. And so it's not the staff, it's going to be ultimately the commission and the commission giving direction. And to me, they're not just words on the paper. I think the commission will or should continuously ask about development of alternative gear and create incentives. So just wanted to let you know that, and thanks.
Okay, Heath, did you want to respond to that, or are you done?
Oh, I'll just say, yeah, thanks for the comments. I mean, you got to understand, you know, sitting here for 7 years watching pretty strong words on paper about developing alternative gear and the real frustrations with it. I appreciate the comments. I think you might understand why there would be a little bit of, suspicion there, I guess. And the only thing I'd just also mention, I agree with you, it's going to matter on the future commission, but it gets into bigger issues about the role of the commission versus staff. What I have seen, and I think you know I've been fairly involved in this, is you guys, many of you have other jobs, you're part-time commissioners, which I appreciate, and I think that was the point of it. It gets into issues about, can part-time commissioners really provide the oversights over this type of a thing. And I hope that's true. Over the last 7 years, I haven't seen it. But that's a much broader issue, but I appreciate the tenor of your comments.
Thank you for your comments, Mr. Heigler. Have a good day. Okay, Nikki, does that wrap up the open public comment segment?
Oh, I did have Greg King pop up real quick, but that is the last one.
Okay, Greg, quickly, please.
Go ahead, Greg.
Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Thank you, Chair Carpenter, Commission, Director Sue Swin. I am calling in this morning to thank the commissioners that went out on the boats and observed what was going on. I unfortunately couldn't get out. I was invited to go out, and I couldn't schedule it to get out. But I greatly appreciate that. That is hands-on. We need more of that when it comes to things like this and this policy as we move along. So anyway, I just wanted to thank everybody that participated out there. And I want one more statement on this PHAS thing. I really think that we should get in contact with NOAA Fisheries. Jeremy Jordan has been, we had a round table 2 years ago. Me and Ron Gardner were there. And Jeremy explained the PHAS thing. Sports just don't have the power to do it. And gill nets are the tool in the toolbox to control PHAS. It is a big deal if we're going to do kit hatchet production for orca whale and for sportsmen to catch more fish. So it is a real thing. And I just wanted to make that clear. Thank you today.
You're muted, Larry.
Okay. Thank you, Nikki. I didn't see that. That wraps up the open public comment segment. We're now moving.